This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Hewitt has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, a third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk here on 710 ESPN Seattle. 710sports.com. Brock, this just keeps getting easier to do every day. Just wake up, jump on the show, and start talking about how good the Mariners are again.
Yeah, not too bad. I think you started that like last Monday. Like, ho-hum, the Mariners just find a way to win again. And this time, though, Salky, a little bit different. This time you're in the House of Horrors for Seattle down there at Minute Maid Park, where the Astros have seemingly owned you the last 2 years. And I think everybody just kind of waiting to see, is this now is it going to get even more real against this level of competition? And the Mariners wasted no time to see Seager come out and have the enormous hit, followed by Zunino just an inning later, and give Paxton the opportunity to just let it rip. He's humming between 95 and 98. I will take that every day and twice on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, you give that guy four runs in the first, you just expect that game's over, right? Like, all right, well, you've given Paxton a 4-0 lead, so everything should be six? Yeah, all right. We'll see you tomorrow. I mean, I'm not there, obviously. I'm back in Boston, and thank you, everybody, for the kind words that we got. As I came back for my uncle's funeral yesterday, and I'm doing the show from here today, I'll be back tonight. So I didn't really get to watch last night other than kind of following along. And, you know, I'm in the car with my mom, and she's like, hey, do you know the Mariners score? I'm like, no, not yet. Oh, it's 6-0. Okay, cool. Game's over. Like, great. So what you're telling me is that when the Mariners leave Houston, they're still going to be in first place no matter what.
Yes, that's what I'm telling you. That's what they did to Dallas Keuchel.
Tonight's game is meaningless. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter whether they win or lose tonight, unless they win.
And they can get six in a row and climb to 17 games above 500.
Now, yeah, I mean, so it matters if they win, but if they lose tonight, it doesn't matter. You just sort of move on. Like, great, they got a sweep in or a split in Houston, and they dominated one of the games. Great, let's move on and kind of see what happens here in the rest of June. But you get the little argument that you were able to survive at least the beginning of it, which is what June is going to be all about. Yeah. You're probably not going to go, 17-7 in June. I mean, that's not going to occur. But if you're able to kind of keep it near 500 and especially on the road, split with teams like the Astros, Brock, you're doing your job. And even better last night when you're able to do it without continuing to deploy all your resources. You didn't have to use your pen.
Yep.
You didn't have to use Diaz. You give him now two nights off in a row. You give almost everybody else in your pen three nights off in a row coming off the Felix start where he had eight innings before you needed to go to the pen. So, those are... If baseball is all about sort of determining when to use all of your resources and managing that over an 162-game slog, you've given yourself a nice little break here.
Yeah, you sure have. And Scott Servais, I think he'd done it perfectly yesterday. It was a kind of game after an off day, Mike, in Houston. I think both sides knew a little bit. Hey, this is rare for Houston. They've not had to look up at anybody in the standings for some time. They wanted to come out sharp. The Mariners came out sharp, or here was a skip following the game.
We're prepared. We're ready to play tonight, and that's a really good sign. This team is, I think people that have followed us here closely the last month and a half, it's a little bit different ball club than we've had in the past. Guys are really relaxed. They're excited. They're having fun. They can't wait to get to the field. They can't wait for the game to start. And it's a different guy all the time. Siegs jumps in there tonight, but it's not just one or two guys driving the train. It's a collective group, and it's a lot of fun.
And that's really what yesterday was. I mean, it was the entire group. It was Paxton who needed a little bit of help, and Heredia and Gamel provided that early. Houston hit him pretty hard, and he had to make some adjustments because off-speed stuff wasn't as sharp as he wanted right off the bat, and he was just fine. And then it was Zunino with the big hit. It was Seager with the big hit. It was a collective group of defense, Mike. This is getting pretty doggone fun. I mean, this feels like it did way, way back when, and I said this to Danny yesterday, when you weren't hoping the Mariners were going to win, but you were just expecting them to play great, and more than likely they were going to get it done. Now 38-22 in the third best start in this franchise's history, man. It is, it's getting real, it's getting fun, and as the Skip said, I think we can all notice it the last month or so, this team hitting its stride.
Yeah, so how much of that look, a month ago is roughly when Cano exits the lineup. How connected are those two things?
Mm. That's going to, yeah, I think that's going to be a wonderful, hopefully, byline, right? Underneath just the team success is, okay, now why is this happening? Yeah, I do think, I think it plays a role when everybody else has got to pick up their, you know, their end of it a bit. Ryan Healy didn't duck from that yesterday with Bob Grouse and Tom talking about, hey, everybody's got to step up, have each other's back when number 24 exits.
You know, there was a couple team meetings throughout, probably not any that you guys are imagining of the, you know, the motivational let's go speech. I just think we all have each other's backs, you know, through over what happens. And obviously an unfortunate situation for, you know, the team and Robinson, but it's something that we have to kind of overcome and still find ways to compete and go out there and win. You know, people aren't going to feel sorry for us that we, you know, lost our second baseman. You know, they're not going to take it easy on us, so we have to go out there and play just as hard every single day, if not harder.
You look at NFL offense. Hey, sorry, Mike. You look at NFL offense.
When are you going to play the Ryan Healy?
Oh, that was Ryan Healy.
No, that's Dave Cameron. When are you going to play the Ryan Healy?
No, that was.
I'm sorry. Is that not Dave Cameron? You like former guest on this show all the time. Now stat geek working for the Padres.
Yeah,
sounds just like him.
Yeah, there's definitely some Dave Cameron there for sure. And I think there's definitely
speed up Ryan Healy just like, you know, a tick or two, and you've got
like
Dave Cameron.
Ticks.
They sound identical. All right, five ticks. Give him five ticks of speed, and the next thing you know, you've got Cameron. But wow,
yeah. But pretty cool. And I was saying that NFL offensive linemen, when they're done playing, do one of two things, and you've seen them. And you saw a couple of them last week at a luncheon. They go one of two ways, NFL offensive line. They either lose a ton of weight or they gain some weight. They very rarely stay the same. And I think teams in this case, when you lose your superstar, it goes one of two ways. Either everybody feels sorry for themselves, they've got some pity, and oh, woe is us, and it goes the wrong way. Or, as Ryan Healy, Dave Cameron just said right there, like, hey, man, we know what we got to do. And everybody's got to pick up their oar and do this thing. And that's exactly what they're getting done, man. And it's just it's a team effort. It's a cumulative effort. And on a gorgeous day in the Pacific Northwest, Salk, where the Olympics were just in rare form driving across 520, it's a good day to be a Mariner fan.
Well, there's no doubt it's a good day to be a Mariner fan. I just, you know, when I hear Scott say the last month, and I don't want to just parse words too much, I know that, you know, you can't help but have your mind go to Cano. He's been out. Do you go to Ichiro? That since Ichiro has begun his new position, Brock, as the batting glove champion of Seattle,
yes.
The guy behind the scenes, not only as the special assistant to the chairman hanging out in the background, but now even throwing batting practice, is that a part of where this, you know, has come from?
Or is this simply chemistry and confidence that comes with winning that
but,
you just...
But are those two things not connected? Ichiro stepping aside, doing what's best for the organization, you know, but still believing enough in this team and his teammates to hang around in full uniform, batting gloves and sweatbands. Like, don't you think those things like kind of help add to some of that chemistry?
Yes, and even yesterday, taking the batting gloves off and throwing a little batting practice.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he's going to be doing more. More is asked of the chairman of the clubhouse. Man, he continues to do more. But yes. Yeah, realizing this is what's best for the team. Realizing when the star goes down, we all got to do a little more. Don't squeeze the bat any tighter. Right, you don't have to do more than you're able and you're talented and gifted enough to do. Just everybody contribute, and when that happens, guess what happens to the Houston Astros? They lose 7-1. You know, in a place where they have dominated you. What did you say the other day? I loved that on Monday. It struck you as well. What a Major League Baseball executive had said about this team was a competitive.
But innings. They play competitive innings.
And that's exactly, man, that is exactly what they did yesterday. After an off day going down into Houston, are you going to do it every single inning? And Paxton in attack mode, and Seager with a big bomb, and then they come back and play tremendous defense, right? And some of that defense and speed just continues to come to life, man. It is.
When is it going to stop, guys? Yeah. When is it going to stop? It's getting really annoying.
We're going to get to this guy in a minute. If you haven't heard any of this sound yet, Kyle played this for me last night. I listened to it while in bed here at my parents' house, and I was laughing out loud in bed at this guy. I am so excited to play the sound of this dude in 20 minutes who, let's just say he's not buying into the Mariners yet. He's not same old Mariners guy.
No.
He's his distant Texan cousin, I guess would be the best way to describe him. And he's going to be a big part of what we do coming up in 20 minutes. Right now, though, 7:10. Time for Need to Know.
Need to Know, the voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Now, a great win in Houston as the Mariners jumped out early and then never looked back. 7-1 the final. Kyle Seager, a three-run opposite field home run in the first inning. He was way out of there. Zunino, a huge two-run blast in the second. And then Paxton pretty much just handled the rest. It's been 7 2/3 innings of one-run ball. You give that guy a 6-0 lead and you expect to win. That's exactly what they did. But I think this is more than just the win. First of all, you get to Keuchel. You're going to have McCullers tonight. That's been no picnic. But good to get to Keuchel, who's probably the realistic number five in that rotation right now, and you got to beat him. But more than that, you show that you can beat the Astros, and you don't have to deploy all your resources. They didn't need to use their pen. Now, 2 days and really 3 days in a row for most of their pen, 2 days of rest for Edwin Diaz, all things they've needed after the string of close games they've put together at home.
Yeah, just about every phase of that game, you dominated, you won. And that's why there was a big old Astros rant, which we will have some fun with. I love Paxton. I thought Paxton was as just focused and fired up as I've seen him. And I think some of that's coming off of a rough start. His last start against Texas was a loss. Wasn't on him, but he gave up. He only went five innings. He wasn't as sharp as he had been. And I think he knew the magnitude of some of this. As you begin this road trip, as you begin this 25-game gauntlet here in the month of June, James Paxton is your ace, and he wanted to come out and he wanted to show it. And that adrenaline was pumping. He was living 95 to 98. He made adjustments during that game because his off-speed stuff wasn't as sharp as he wanted early, and he talked about that and those adjustments in-game, which he's gotten so much better at. You got the big hits. You played tremendous defense. You've gone over a dozen games without an error, and because of it, you're 38-22 and 2 games up in the American League West.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Yeah, three in the loss column, by the way. Seahawks left tackle Dwayne Brown told reporters he and the Seahawks have not really started contract negotiations. He's set to become a free agent at the end of the 2018 season. And, you know, Brock, I think you and I have both believed that that was something they would really work on this offseason, that when they made the deal for Brown and gave up the kind of resources they did, that one of the reasons they did so is because they saw a left tackle for the future. And, yeah, I'll be pretty disappointed if they don't end up signing him to some sort of a long-term deal, not just because he's the door, as John Schneider referred to him, but, you know, to have traded away the resources they did for both Dwayne Brown and Sheldon Richardson, you would sure like to see that one of those two guys at least was going to be part of their long-term plans, if not both. I understand it wasn't Sheldon Richardson, and after watching him last year, I think I understand why he was disappointing. I would be really bummed out if Dwayne Brown does not work out as a long-term,
yeah,
you know, mainstay at tackle here for the next, I don't know, 3 to 5 years. I felt like that's what you were getting when you traded for him.
You know, I should have commented about him last week in that OTA I got a chance to see, because he's going into his 11th year, Mike, and we've watched vets over the last couple seasons in Seattle, be it Michael Bennett or Cliff Averill or those guys, and, you know, they treat some of these OTAs very differently than Dwayne Brown did, man. He was all in. He talked about that as he met the press, like, hey, this is my first offseason with this team, and we got to get to know one another. And his work capacity was off the charts when I watched it. And the other reason he's asked about it, Mike, and why this is a real conversation, is there's money in the salary cap to get this done. If John Schneider and the Seahawks wanted to get a deal done, there is enough money to get it done with Brown. There's enough money to get it done with Frank Clark. Maybe not for Earl Thomas and the stratosphere that he's asking for, but there's money on the table to get a deal done. And there'll be a few months before training camp to see if the Seahawks and Dwayne Brown's agent can find a deal to be made.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, a fantastic season for the Husky women's softball team comes to an unfortunate end last night. They lose 8-3 to Florida State in the Women's College World Series. It was a best out of three, and they get swept 2-0. So, unfortunately, their season comes to a close. Just too much hitting, Florida.
As Florida State did get it going. Yeah, they were up. Unfortunately, the Huskies were 3-0 in that game yesterday, and Florida State was just frankly the better team. I was telling Lydia that about an hour ago, Mike, that as you watch that unfold, and the night before was tough. The Huskies, a little bit tight in game one, committed a couple very uncharacteristic errors, fell 1-0. But yesterday, with a 3-0 lead, it became clear over seven innings that the Seminoles were just simply the better team. They played looser. They played better on the bigger stage. They found a way to get it done. But nothing for the Huskies to hold their heads down for. Number two in America. And on that stage, quite an accomplishment for Heather Tarr and this group, which largely returns for 2019.
All right, there are three things that you need to know. Of course, we do that every single day at 7:10, which is a lot of fun. You know, it's funny that the Dwayne Brown leadership stuff you talk about there, Brock.
Yeah.
it kind of got me thinking about how the personality of leaders will change the personalities of teams, and whether it's Robinson Cano exiting just about a month ago and Ichiro doing what he's doing, and, you know, D. Gordon and Gene Segura and some of the other younger, Mike Zanino, some of the other younger leaders on this team kind of being given space, or whether it's Dwayne Brown replacing Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman as one of the vocal leaders inside that Seahawks locker room. Those things sure do seem to have an impact on the personality of
teams. And if there is one group on the Seahawks team that could use an infusion of some of that voice more than any position group, and we have, really since Max Unger left, you've had a void that's been unable to be filled. Justin Britt's done some of that, but as far as a true, I've got this thing, follow me, that O-line could certainly use that kind of presence.
Let's talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
If you want to take care of him now. The price is only going to go up.
Brought to you by Divorce Lawyers from N.com.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, guys.
How are we doing today?
I'm doing great.
Good to hear. I'm using your app, the one that you've made famous for using it at your house. So hopefully things continue to go well today. Let's start here. Dwayne Brown says he and the Seahawks haven't been talking extension yet. Does that surprise you? Kind of seem like something that everyone thought would get done this offseason.
Not really. I think that, you got the young guys that you want to try to get from the 2015 draft, Tyler Lockett and Frank Clark. Because, again, what you want to do is have the flexibility, depending on how those numbers come in, to use Dwayne Brown to try to, clear up some cap room, because he's sitting there with $9.75 million of cap room, and that's his salary. And how you structure it will alleviate more cap room and provide more space for any of these other deals. Don't forget Justin Coleman. Justin Coleman probably is a guy that will be in the mix, too. But just like all negotiations, they are slow. It's hard to get deals done in this league. The money keeps going up for starters, and it's very difficult to try to at least come to some kind of deals, but I think that it's kind of the waiting game to see how they do with some of the young guys.
With the Cliff Averill move, it freed up some salary cap. So what are they looking at right now as we sit today? You've got the rookie pool. Some of those guys have been signed as well. What are we looking at dollars and cents wise today, John?
They're $10.6 million, and they only have one unsigned draft choice. That's Raheem Green, the third-round pick, and so I'm sure they'll get that done sometime in the next week. And so they've got plenty of room. So other than, say, for injuries, I mean, because normally what you need to do is you need to put about $10 million aside for the draft choices, which they've already pretty well taken care of, and for guys that are going to be injured, because you have to start bringing those in and they start to mount up.
Okay.
So,
call it $10 million bucks. So yeah. Right now, as they prioritize, and I think we've learned this over the last few years, they do, and it's very clearly, here's your time. This is your window of opportunity for us to get something done. If we don't, we're not going to get it done, and we'll move along. So as they prioritize Frank Clark, Justin Coleman, Dwayne Brown, maybe even Earl Thomas, if he's anywhere still in that conversation, if they prioritize it, what would be the pecking order for you?
Well, I mean, obviously, the defensive end is going to be the key, because it's going to be the most expensive. But the problem is, it's going to be, because when you think about the 2015 draft, and I was just going through this the other day, I mean, you only have like about a 20% chance of getting a long-term deal in that last year. I mean, for example, there was 10 second rounders that got long-term deals last year from the 2014 draft, and only seven in the previous couple years. And what ends up happening, and it's understandable, the agents are taking the position, it's like, okay, wait a second, we want to see how we can do on the open market, because we think we got a pretty good player. This happens in the second and third round, and if it doesn't work out, then hey, they may have to franchise the player, or if not, they don't franchise them, we hit the free agent market. So it's difficult. So really, you only have like about a 25-35% chance of getting something done with a second and third round pick from a certain draft.
So you would prioritize Frank Clark right now for the Seahawks, you would prioritize getting a deal done with him rather than Dwayne Brown.
Yeah, because again, you know Dwayne's going to be there, and you can try to get Dwayne right toward the end of training camp. I mean, first, what you have to try to judge, because what you want to try to do is get the deal that you can do first. Like, for example, I mean, it wouldn't be a bad idea to start out with Justin Coleman if you believe how good he played last year and the slot's going to continue, and then maybe work on Tyler Lockett, because those will be more doable deals. When you're talking about Frank Clark, now you're talking more than $10 million a year, and he's maybe thinking, well, wait a second, if I can have a big year like DeMarcus Lawrence, maybe I get 14, 15. And if not, I get maybe the franchise tag, which at that time is probably going to be $18 million.
I just don't know that they're sold on him. I mean, I get what you're saying in terms of the way the deal's structured, but I think they're sold on Justin Coleman. I think they're sold on probably Tyler Lockett. I think they're sold on Dwayne Brown. Are you sure they're sold that Frank Clark is that kind of a big-time, big-money player?
And that's probably why there's no deal at this stage, because, do you count him as a number one or a number two? If he's a number one, it's going to be, $3 to $5 million more. But I think they're sold on him as being a number two.
I don't know if I do, John. Do you? Like, if you were the cap guy, right, and you left, you've been offered at some different times in your career, you're a number driver, and right. If you're asked and pushed, like, do you sign Frank Clark? Do you spend $10 million a year on him?
Problem is, if you don't, what do you have left? That means you have by next year, you have lost your top three pass rushers.
Gosh, but I hate to put myself in that position, right? I don't want to be in that position. I totally get where you're coming from, and Averill and Bennett, it's a bummer, and Deion Jordan's your other guy you're counting on, and I bet he wants a deal too. So I hate to be put in a position like, well, I don't know about it, but if I don't, then I'm doomed. That doesn't.
Yeah, you don't
want
to overpay. There's no question. You don't want to overpay, and so what you might have to do, because I think when you look in the big picture, he might be the biggest priority, but I think he's probably going to be the last one signed because the stakes are so much bigger for him.
Do you see this news about the Browns? John, I know they're your favorite team.
They
want their players to earn their helmet stripes.
Uh-huh.
So not quite going full Michigan or Ohio State where you get credit for things during the year. But if you want stripes on top of your helmet, you've got to make the 53-man roster. You don't get it in training camp.
Yeah, well, that's probably wise. But, are there 53 players good enough to prevent other guys from getting their stripes?
John, come on. There are people picking the Browns to make the playoffs this year.
Yeah, there's a lot of stupid people. I can understand that.
All right, not going to be convinced just yet.
I am not going to be convinced. Well, but I think they can win 5 games. I think that, they're getting better on defense. They've now got, they got Michael Kendricks to the linebacking core. It's a good linebacking core. They got a great defensive end that they drafted last year. Their secondary is starting to get a little bit better, but still their offense is going to be a problem.
You ready for the wild card?
Time now for the wild card. Wild card.
Mr. Professor Clayton.
Yes.
What's the earliest smell you can remember in your life?
The earliest smell? Because I guess I don't. When you're like 3 to 5 years old, do you remember any kind of smell?
Mm.
I'm sure probably I have something from the bathroom. I'm sure some kind of a smell from that's not real good coming from the bathroom is the first one because it's so close to you. So you get that one. Think you can still remember maybe when you're 6 or 7 and you get that springtime smell, so you smell some flowers. Mm. That's the positive side. So I think those are probably the first two that you can remember. But I don't know.
That's the one I would go with, John, is that sort of cut grass, outdoorsy smell from being a kid. That's probably number one on my list.
Yeah, because it's going to be different than what you smell inside.
Probably gasoline, about the only thing that's cut through my septum. That's about it.
Right, you don't have a sense
and
of smell.
And Damon just loved the smell of gasoline. Yeah, Damon just loved it for some reason. So.
What does he like about it?
Always a fun experience. Thank you. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, thanks.
All right, John Clayton with us every single day right at 7:15. His show will be at 10 o'clock. And then later today with Danny, Dave, and Moore. I guess they have an early short show today, so usually at 4 o'clock with Danny, Dave, and Moore. All right, Mike Zunino hit a ball 110 miles an hour last night. It went for a 429-foot home run. It was a no-doubter. So why is one Astros fan furious at the man he calls nobody? You'll have to hear it next. I'm Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
Mariners win again. What'd you say, Brock? It just continues, in the words of the great Dave Niehaus, and that's how it's felt certainly over the last month. Every single night, it has just continued. Finding new, fun, and creative ways to win, and nice to see last night. It was kind of a no-doubter. Kind of forgot what those are like, right?
Yeah, we haven't had many of
those. Score a bunch of runs early and put it to bed. Like, thanks, let's do that. Embedded in that game, though, Brock, was a really solidly hit, fairly typical Mike Zunino blast, cut 7. You may remember it sounded a lot like this.
The pitch swung on, well hit ball deep to left field. Stay fair. This one is up by the windows and it is gone. Goodbye, baseball. Holy smokes, over the railroad tracks, down the left field line, Mike Zunino with a long home run.
He's Mike Zunino, Brock.
Yeah. No, he's interesting. Just from a swing perspective, it's usually lefties that have that loop zone, right? The Darryl Strawberries. You always hear about a lefty got that loop zone. If you throw it kind of down and in, they just destroy it. Mike's kind of got a loop zone as well. Like if you leave a fastball or many times one of those sliders or something off speed just in his wheelhouse, he breaks things. He broke Edgar's knee on and he broke the window last night. I mean, he just is wrecked Zunino.
It seems like he just takes the same swing every single time. And if the ball hits it square, it goes 430 feet. And other than that, he just kind of misses, which is how he manages to hit under 200 with as many home runs as he's got. But, you know, he hit what will sure look like a no-doubter. He watched it go over the fence and then took off running. Mike Zunino is not exactly known as a show-you-up type of a player, right? I've never heard of anything like that. And so I think you can imagine the surprise from Mariners fans everywhere when the Twitter feed for Astros Rants took exception to Mike Zunino, of all people, pimping his home run last night.
Here we are again. Second nine in a row. When is it going to stop, guys? When is it going to stop? It's getting really annoying. And what's funny and hilarious is it's only happening against the Astros. The Astros aren't doing this. Teams are disrespecting the Astros. They're disrespecting the world champs right now. And I won't stand for it. I definitely won't stand for it. Watch this. Mike Zunino. Mike Zunino. No one even really knows who Mike Zunino is. Let's be honest. So here it goes. Mike Zunino, a loser. It's a home run, and don't tell me he was just making sure the home run went over the fence. It went 459 feet. He wasn't making sure anything. Watch how long he stares at it. Still staring at it. Showing up Dallas Keuchel, showing up a World Series champion, showing up someone that has a ring that he'll never get in his whole entire life. It's at this point, you can tell my voice that I'm not really angry anymore. I'm just disappointed and upset at these people. I mean, just put the bat down, stare at the ball for a second, and run the bases.
I love this guy. I don't know if he's serious, if it's a joke. I don't really care either way. He's my favorite new thing on Twitter. I'm going to have to follow him and hear his rants every night.
He has his own podcast.
No, he's not.
He's even been tweeted at by MLB. I saw a photo of this, which tweeted at him at some other earlier occasion. You must be fun at parties. So he has a podcast, which if you read the descriptions, it's like, this episode, why the Red Sox are a garbage organization, why Dallas is still the best team. Yeah.
But he says he's ranting, Lydia. Does he always speak in that tone of voice, or does he ever actually have rant tone?
And I won't stand for it. I definitely won't stand for it.
I would say the Twitter, like, actual descriptions feel more ranty, but you're right. It's kind of a subdued rant.
That's really.
A rant is like, you know, the dude yelling it's Division I football, right? I mean, like, who is that? Mike Gundy? Like, that's a rant.
Division I football! It's a Big 12! It ain't either murals! You got 2 weeks after finals, you got a week of July 4th, and you got a week before camp starts. That's a month! That's probably more vacation than you guys get!
Oh, no, that's a great Dan Hawkins. Yeah, that's the great Dan Hawkins.
Oh, Dan Hawkins, sorry.
No,
where are we at in society?
Here you go. Here's Gundy.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40. I'm not a kid.
Yeah, right, those are rants.
Yes, those are the epic rants. Homeboy last night.
This guy's not ranting. He's like calmly dissecting in a depressed form. He's like Phil the Skunk. Like, he's not ranting.
Hey, Richard Sherman, so much. Falcons should have won. They could have gotten that touchdown. That was a pass interference. Why didn't the refs call that?
That is a rant.
So do you determine by the tonality instead of base? I thought it was just an extended complaint.
Rant, I want cadence. I want tempo. Like, you better be spitting these words out of your mouth with some good tempo, because I want you literally ranting and not just kind of calmly walking through how Mike Zunino's annoyed you, how he's upset you, disrespect.
It's June, guys. It's June. This is a pointless game. It's a pointless game that means nothing.
Yeah, that's more of a wallow. That's more of a, I'm kind of with you. I think you need a little bite. You need a little energy. I think you need the birthday cake on the head, right? I think, Salk, one of your great rants in 9 years here was when you went out.
You can play it, but it's not the greatest because we all know the definition of a rant, Brock. I'll play it for you in a second. Yes, you can play me having, you know, getting mad at Howdy, but that was more just being irritated with Howdy.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a rant of sorts, I guess you would say.
We stink, man.
Oh, no, not that. No, me. That's the ultimate. I want to play that next. Give me, like, you can, the setup is I sounded like this doing sort of a half-hearted
rant on Howdy. You do this before every game, and now you're doing this in a game that you can't do this for.
Of course you can. It's the NFL.
So you're telling me you're not going to be
shocked if you would ever look at any game and say, oh, it's a cakewalk in the NFL. The fact that you would ever think that, I think, is insane.
It's not a cakewalk. Fine. We all agree it's
Howdy
the NFL.
Doesn't. Howdy's walking around
Howdy,
on cake.
Yeah, but Howdy's an extremist. Okay?
Howdy has baked the cake, has it on top of his head, and he's parading around in a circle like a wind-up toy.
That was pretty good.
That still gets me every time. I think that's a rant, Salt.
Is it Wassel saying, well, Howdy's an extremist? That's the best part of that rant,
Here's the definition in the dictionary. It's interesting because as a verb, I feel like it is more of an aggressive thing. It implies tone. It implies excited shouting. But as a noun, it's more of, oh, it can just be an extended complaint. You were ranting about it. That was an extended rant.
No one even really knows who Maxinino is. Let's be honest.
I'm sorry. Under the dictionary definition, Lydia, it should just say, see Bruce Drennan, because this is an actual rant.
We stink, man. Ah. Oh. Oh. Oh.
Ah! Val Buena. Give him back. You know what? Give him back to the Mets, man. Somebody said he should be in Columbus tonight. I said, send him to Mahoning Valley.
Yeah, that's probably the best.
They haven't even started their season.
Oh, I have a pain in my side on this side. I got a pain on my side on this side. My knees hurt. My elbow hurts like LeBron. Most of all, my head hurts. My psyche's hurt. I'm hurting all over my body.
Head to toe.
Head to toe.
Thank you, Bruce. Bruce is the ultimate. That's the greatest rant. So what's the deal? Are the Mariners kind of, is this showing that the Mariners are getting under some people's skins, that they're arriving?
Is this like the best sign ever? That somebody is actually upset with the Mariners? That somebody is actually can rant about them? I'm going to guess that Mr. Astros rant guy has had nothing to say about the Mariners for the last, 5 years. Even when they came into the division and they were terrible. They were terrible. They still owned us in many ways. So I think this is maybe the most positive sign of anything this season, that Astros rant actually has something to get mad about, and that's a Mariners team that they're looking up to.
Mike Zunino, a loser, hits a home run.
I just like that addition. Mike Zunino, a loser, hits a home run.
Right.
I mean, how does this make you feel,
I'm coming
Howdy?
For that guy. I don't have any patience or time for this guy. I mean, who does this guy think he is? He's just some sad teenager sitting in his parents' basement complaining and whining about the ills of society that aren't really ills of society, and he's going to come after my guy? I got something for Astros rant guy. I'm coming for you, Astros rant guy, because you don't deserve to have a microphone. I do. Mike Zunino deserves a platform. You don't deserve a thing.
I do.
Woo! That's
Mike
a rant.
Mike Zunino does not deserve a platform, though. Let's be clear. Zunino deserves to be able to hit. I don't know if he needs a platform.
He deserves a plaque.
Close to
and
it.
By the way, right. Dude, stop saying he's hitting under 200. He's hitting 211, Salk. Okay? So stop
I'm
taking
so sorry.
Shots.
I'll take it back. Okay? I'm sure by the end of the year, he'll never dip below 200.
Get
again.
Your
that
facts and come back and see us all right?
We got a text here who has it right, 710-710. Mike Zunino defines the phrase, run into one. Mike, yes, I hope he runs into one here. Yep, he ran into that one. Good job, Mike. That one's over the fence. All right, coming up next, Brock, we'll switch gears, and we'll get to some of your calls here at 8 o'clock. The simplest question with a complicated answer, that's for you guys at 8, right after Coors Light's Blue 42. And the veteran free agent who will have the most risk of not making the Seahawks team, that's next. I'm Brock and Salk.
The Astros are still the best team in baseball, and the Mariners, they're disrespecting them like they're one of the worst teams. It's pitiful, it's sickening, and it's disgusting.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U-corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready? Right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Tell you what, man, it's been so fun watching this Mariner team, another five straight, coming off a couple of losses. They get D. Gordon back. They haven't lost since. They've been great, and they're guaranteed now to leave Houston still in first place, regardless of the outcome tonight. So all things going great in Seattle these days, Brock. I don't know why the text machine's so mad.
What's it mad about?
Furious.
And who?
I don't know.
The Astros rated guy?
Really? All week.
When is it going to stop, guys? When is it going to stop?
Really?
I don't know what's going on with the texters out there. Oh. A lot of anger. A lot of bitterness. We'll see if we can get to the bottom of it. We'll get you guys on the horn, see if the callers are a little nicer than the texters. They will be coming up here at 8 o'clock. Simple question for you. We'll get to that in a minute. Let me start with a question for you, Brock. Coors Light's Blue 42. Of the veteran free agents the Seahawks signed this offseason, who's most at risk of not making the team?
Seabass. Sebastian Janikowski, actually in images this week, which is good. You know, we only at times get to see pictures that the Seahawks distribute on their website and otherwise. Had not seen Sebastian Janikowski, turned 40 years of age in March. And I know as a 40-something-year-old that when you get hurt, it gets a lot harder to heal. Your healing time is not anywhere near what it was when you were 20 or even 30 years of age. And it was a calf injury that doomed him in Oakland, opened the door for others, and ultimately closed the door. And I think it's some of that injury risk that other teams said, frankly, no thanks. He's got a groin injury he's dealing with or a leg injury of some sort right now. So you've seen very little of him this entire offseason. It's been the Jason Myers show, who, by the way, when I watched you practice the other day, 5 of 5 all the way to 55 yards with plenty of legs. So a very talented guy. And as Janikowski said when he was signed here, it was not as if there were a lot of teams knocking on his door.
First of all, you know, I want to thank the organization for, you know, inviting me here and helping me start a career again all over. And, you know, there wasn't many phone calls, honestly.
Little Scott Service nervous laughter there. Yeah, honestly, there wasn't many other phone calls. Haven't been able to go, and I think, it, you know, just some of that injury risk. There's about $500,000 dumped into him, though. I mean, he had a signing bonus. It wasn't just a league minimum deal. So he's going to have training camp and everything else to prove that he can stay healthy. But if he's got nagging injuries, I think he's at the most risk of not making this team.
All right, question number two. Kind of talked about it with Clayton earlier, Duane Brown saying that no, he hasn't had any conversations yet about a potential deal with the Seahawks. I think we all thought that would be something that would get done this offseason. If you were John Schneider, who are you working on a deal for first, him or Frank Clark?
No, absolutely Duane Brown for me. Frank has got a lot to prove, and I know Frank and his agent understand the need and the premium they believe he should get in Seattle as their only bona fide proven pass rusher on this roster. But I'm going to guess they're asking for the moon. Duane Brown, who's been around this league. Now, he did hold out, right? He wanted his deal in Houston, and he played the nuclear card there, held out into the first six regular season games of last season. So I think he has shown in his past that if he doesn't like the deal, he's going to walk away from it and be willing to do so. The Seahawks have proven that in their track record, that if you don't play to their numbers and you are not agreeable and you won't work with them, they're not going to work with you. So I think that's why both of them remain unsigned. I hope that it's Duane Brown. It's as far as the leadership void that I think he can fill on an offensive line, as far as a competent and capable left tackle that can keep grooming Ethan Posick next to him and having a competent NFL at least side of an O-line, give me Duane Brown. But Duane, pretty clear in the OTAs this week, there's not anything near brewing yet.
My agent's handling that. You know, I trust that everything's going to happen in good time and, you know, when it's supposed to. For now, I'm just concerned with, you know, this moment, embracing every day that I have here in the offseason. Like I said, this is the first time I've been able to work with this group of guys in the offseason, and I'm really cherishing it and enjoying it. You know, it's my 11th year going into, so, you know, I'm not concerned with that. I'm concerned with improving as a player, helping my group up front improve, and doing all I can for this team. And everything else will work itself out.
Running backs in this league are getting signed, Mike. A bunch of them did in the offseason. Safeties, well, they're getting signed or they're sitting out because they're not getting their money. Linebackers are getting signed. The toughest position in the free agent market, and I think even here in Seattle, pass rushers and offensive tackles. Those guys have gotten significant premiums the last couple years, and those are the two guys you're trying to get in the fold contractually here this offseason.
All right, question number three. So, Brock, you watched Russell's Legends show.
I did. I downloaded Traceman.
I'm sorry. Is this the one where he is advocating for a new arena in Seattle or the one where he advocates for a new arena in Portland?
No, those are just different.
Is this the ESPN thing he did?
Bro, that's QB to QB. You're talking about Mr. Unlimited.
The app?
Yeah, this is the app. There you go.
Okay, sorry. It's really hard.
But it's the show on the app.
Yes.
This is the app. This is the show where you get to find out where your celebrities are and what they're doing?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So this
is what the show's about?
No, Trace Me the app is it's kind of hard to explain. I'm not the most technical guy.
Hey, this is your job, man.
It is.
You're the one who wants to get paid the big bucks for Blue 42.
So
you better figure out what's going on.
Oh, I got it. No, I got it. Okay. So Trace Me app is his app that he is really trying to, provide for those to get a kind of behind-the-scenes look at athletes. Now, inside that app, he's got a show that's called Legends. Bill Russell, Steve Kerr, he's interviewed a number of them. And I will tell you, there's 18 minutes of a sit-down with Felix Hernandez that you will enjoy. They just taped it a couple days ago after Felix's good start. And I think it was the most, if QB to QB had some challenges chemistry-wise, I would say of the things that I've watched Russell do, you could feel a genuine kinship between those two guys. It wasn't the first time they've met. They have spent some time together in the past, Felix and Russell. And it was worthy of 18 minutes of watching. It was pretty good. It was pretty good of two guys that are stars in this town that love this city, that love the fans in this city. And if you're a diehard Mariners and Seahawks fan, you may want to download that app and watch it. It was worthy of the 18 minutes.
All right, that is today's Coors Light's Blue 42. Can we stop for a moment, pause, and think about how funny it is that Russell Wilson, of all people, thought that it is so important to understand the inner workings of what's going on behind the scenes with athletes and celebrities, that Russell Wilson, of all people, thought that was so important that he wanted to invest in an app that does that?
Right.
A guy that gives you nothing, that does not really let you behind the curtain, other than the, like a couple of these little like kind of fake glimpses, that person is the one who thought that Trace Me would be a good idea.
Well, I mean, he did develop the alter ego there. Right? I mean, maybe on the surface, you don't get, a whole lot.
Mr. Unlimited. Yeah.
I love Russ. I love him. He's one of my favorite players of all time to watch. Yeah. But the idea of a guy who he's not standoffish, but he is as cliche and tries everything in his power not to let you behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Was like, hey, you know what the fans really want?
Yeah.
To look behind the curtain.
Yeah.
I've got the perfect way to do it. Let's build an app.
Yeah.
The irony is thick. Yes. That's for sure. All right. You talk about favorite players, Brock, right? It doesn't always have to be rational. Sometimes it's just emotional. You choose your favorites. Well, we're a couple of months into a Mariners season with a whole bunch of heroes. And so we're going to ask you guys the simplest question we can. Who is your favorite Mariner as we sit here today on the 6th of June? Who is your favorite Mariner on the 2018 team? Couldn't be a simpler question. I would hope everybody here has an answer. 206-421-3776. We'll grab some of your calls next. The top five board will be lit. It's Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle.